Okay, are we ready?
Yeah.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
What are we doing?
A podcast.
We're starting a podcast for some reason.
Yes.
So, welcome to Hard Knocks Film School, episode one.
Yeah, that's what we're calling it. My name is Tim Linville.
I'm Chloe Hoover.
And we're so happy you guys are here.
So, the idea with this podcast is... to teach ourselves and hopefully you guys something about film or everything about film. I don't know.
Well, we're trying to learn everything about film. I guess some version of that. We're trying to learn as much as we can about film.
So originally we were going to do one movie per episode. That was kind of hard to do at the beginning. We called this episode the Round Hay Garden Scene because I guess we think that that's the earliest surviving film.
Yeah, after much research and fretting, I think this is sort of what both we as well as whatever the experts have decided that this is the oldest surviving film.
Right. So a lot of guys were patenting cameras and experimenting around the same time.
Yeah. I mean, people were making great leaps forward technologically, generally, as well as specifically when it came to camera technology. The question of where does photography end and where does film begin sort of became the question as we looked deeper and deeper into what was the, you know, quote unquote first movie, right?
Yeah, so that led us to this guy called Edward Muybridge, who was an interesting and funny looking fellow. We have a picture of him on our Instagram, actually.
I mean, when we first read about him, the story that I originally heard was that he was hired by the then governor of California, Governor Stanton, I believe.
No, Leland Stanford.
Stanford, excuse me.
Yeah, because he's Stanford. Is he Stanford, like Stanford University?
I mean, I don't know.
Is he connected to that?
Wouldn't surprise me any. I can't say for sure. I didn't look into that connection. But now that you say it, like...
California.
Yeah, yeah, I mean...
I wonder.
Yeah.
Anyway, his first name was Leland. I remembered
that. But this guy, Edward Muybridge, was hired by Leland Stanford to... settle a bet, but as it turns out, it's a great story, but not necessarily true. And the bet was that at some point in its stride, a horse has all four hooves off the ground.
Yeah, so Edward Muybridge was actually a photographer, and he was interested in studying movement, I think specifically the movement of animals. And so he, if you know what a zoetrope is... Or any of those, you know, those things that you sort of look into a little slot and it spins around and you see sort of like a little animation on a loop, kind of like a flip book. Mm-hmm. He made things like that. And he would, I guess, go all around the world and give these talks on like how to make them and like, you know, what that would mean, that you could study the movement of this animal that you can't see with the naked eye or whatever. So he was famous in his own time. He traveled like all around the world doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So he was sort of the inspiration for a lot of people when they saw, you know, you see this little video on a loop, or they didn't call it a video then, but you know, wouldn't it be amazing if it wasn't a loop and if it just kind of kept going?
Mm-hmm.
And he put that idea into a lot of people's heads, and this was, you know, the 1870s, and by the 1880s, people were patenting cameras.
So I suppose it makes sense that whatever Leland would have sought out Muybridge, right, to settle this particular, well, to accomplish this task, if not settle the bet, because perhaps the bet wasn't true.
Yeah, I don't think the bet part of it was true, as it turns out.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot of that in the early days. There's a lot of stories that may or may not be
true.
I was gonna say true, you know, half true.
Oh yeah, so things, you know, people in early film seem sort of larger than life, or like are painted as larger in life, sort of.
And they just sort of
retrospectively
altered their history a little bit. Everybody changed their names, and you know, one of those early who was one of the earlier cowboy guys, like, told people that he was from Texas and he was from Pennsylvania, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody has their, everybody, and then everybody always sort of, like, wrote their memoirs, and, well, it's people telling their own history, isn't it?
Yeah, in the same way that, you know, the Victorians loved kind of making stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
They loved making up stories and believing stuff that wasn't true.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, so we can take Muybridge with a grain of salt, perhaps, but he is a bit of a larger-than-life character, isn't he? Like, that man, who's born in England, but spent most of his life in the U.S., right?
He sort of made the first, well, he didn't make the first film, but he got the closest that anybody had gotten at the time.
Right.
The way he did the horse thing was he took a series of like 12 or 14 photos, but he just tripwired a bunch of cameras in a row.
I mean, which is
so as the horse was running, it would like all the cameras would go off, and he kind of quickly, that was the quickest anybody was able to take pictures in succession like that.
Which is clever, but there's also rumors that that may or may not have been his own original idea, because while he was trying to accomplish this task, which took some time.
It took him like 7 years to figure that out.
Yeah. Like he was being tried for the murder of his wife's lover and also trying to do this thing at the same time. So I read this book. I read this book by William K. Everson, and he says that most of the credit for taking these pictures should actually go to his assistant, to Muybridge's assistant.
Yeah, because Edward was busy being a murderer. Well, apparently he had like a head injury, so he got acquitted, or they decided that it was justifiable homicide,
which
I guess
is messed up, man.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that he sort of pled insanity because of this head injury that he got in a stagecoach crash in Texas.
I mean, come on. It's like, it's not.
That's not funny, but it sounds funny now.
Yeah, but, you know, because by the story that you read is that he basically just, like, walked up to this dude, like, in public and shot him point blank. Just pulled out a gun, bam, shot this guy. And, you know, his lawyers are trying to plead this insanity plea for him because of the head injury that you mentioned. But meanwhile, he's undercutting himself when he gets on the stand and being like, nah, I thought about it, like, a whole bunch.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to do that. It was fully planned. Oh, man.
So you just impulsively shot him, right? Well, I thought about it for a couple of weeks first. No.
Shh. Ed, no.
He was a strange man.
Yeah.
He changed the spelling of his name to, it looks like Eid weird. It's E-A-D-W-E-A-R-D, mm-hmm. Which is supposed to be like the original Anglo-Saxon spelling or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, he's not around to ask, but yeah, I don't.
We don't know if that was pre or post head injury.
Yeah, it seems like something someone with a TBI would do.
Yeah, like it
feels on brand.
Like a Phineas Gage situation.
Yeah.
Maybe he was a different guy after.
His friends say that he is. There's accountings of people close to him saying that he went from like a pretty nice, amiable guy who was into nature and photographing animals to like to being pretty labile, to like super, you know, unpredictable.
That's true. But maybe we only have records of them saying that in court. Maybe he paid him. I don't know.
That seems right. But his work, regardless of how weird of a guy Edward was, his work with taking these photos and then going around, we're not calling them a movie yet, taking these photo series and then going around and showing them to people, this was sort of the seed that set the stage for what would become, I guess, a race to create the first movie camera.
The first moving pictures.
Yeah,
so people sort of, they were patenting motion picture cameras before they were sort of able to describe how they were going to do that.
Or without actually without really having to demonstrate proof of concept, right? no one had, like, we'd come up with some designs, we've patented a design, but we haven't actually got it working yet.
Sure.
And this is really a question of hardware at this point, right? More than the movies, more than the actual film or movie, it's really a question of, like, coming up with the technology necessary to make Roundhay Garden Scene possible.
Right. So the celluloid didn't quite exist yet. Roundhay Garden Scene was shot on paper film,
yeah,
which was still made by Eastman Kodak. They were always the ones making film, even pre-celluloid.
A monopoly before there was a monopoly to be had. Some people did try to do it on glass plates, though, which I don't know. We couldn't find an example of that. And I know it sounds, I don't know how you do that without breaking them. It's like some sort of weird slideshow situation.
Or how are they all connected? I don't really understand that.
Yeah.
I can picture paper film. I'm having a hard time picturing glass film.
Well, the thing with paper film is, then how do you make it thin enough to project through? Like, how do you project that? I'm having a tough time sort of imagining that particular piece of engineering. I can sort of picture how you would expose it, but then the playback, yeah, I don't know, man.
So the Roundhay Garden Scene was shot by a man named Louis Lay Prince. No, just kidding. Louis Le Prince.
It says here, Louis, if I'm, am I reading this correctly? Oh my God, yeah.
So he was a French gentleman who a lot of people do credit with creating the first film, although it's a fine line, as we'll find out. And he shot it in Leeds,
mm-hmm,
in October of 1888. And a lot of people were racing to the finish line here, and people like Edison sort of famously claimed that they completed work earlier than they actually did.
Edison, you rascal.
Except that this film is unique because there's a really old lady in it that died like 10 days after they made it, so pretty good evidence that it was made when they said it was.
And we watched a documentary called The First Film, and the guy actually goes to this woman's grave to sort of prove, you know, the date on which this was made, because, as he says, that would be a very difficult and pointless thing to try and forge. So the evidence is there for this to rightly take the title.
So the film itself is, I think, 20 frames.
Yeah, it's not very
something
long.
Something like that.
It's a couple seconds looped.
Yep. And it just looks like it's like four people in a courtyard, and they're sort of wandering around, and they're sort of walking unnaturally. It's a little strange.
It's his son, his mother-in-law.
Right.
Right. And then, like, I don't know who, I can't remember who the two other people are. But if you watch the film, there's like
there's a young woman that's a sister or
right
or something.
The guy sort of walking around weirdly is his son Adolf.
Right, and he appears in, I guess I'll call it, one of Louis Le Prince's almost films. So in deciding what the first film was. I mean, not just we didn't come up with this, but it seems that the opinion of what makes it a film versus a series of photographs is the frame rate at which you're able to play it back, and also your ability to play it back at all as a film, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would agree. And I think the frame rate is right around 16 frames per second. And
it might even be lower than that, even like 10.
Well,
or so it has the illusion of movement.
Well, prior to, I guess, Le Prince did make what some people tried to describe as a film before Roundhay Garden Scene, and that was what Man Coming Around a Corner. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, they don't. I mean, obviously, well, they weren't real. These are just a couple second long experiments by Louis Le Prince. So
yes.
This is just sort of what we call them now.
Yeah.
Man Coming Around a Corner is an interesting one because
that's what I was gonna say.
Of how it was shot.
That's why we don't. That's why it's not the first film, is because they think it might have been shot on a 16 lens camera.
Right.
And sort of, I had to sort of see it before I understood exactly what was going on here. But basically, it's just like 16 lenses.
Looks like a bunch of elevator buttons.
Yeah, mounted on a box. So it's basically like 16 cameras taking photos in very quick succession. And that, when you look at it, it really looks more like a flip book. There was no way to kind of play that back as a movie, sort of as we think of it.
Right. And the unspoken, as everybody is racing to get these cameras completed, the two, I don't know if it was spoken or unspoken. I know a lot of these people corresponded with each other, but I don't really know to what degree. The game really became getting it all into one lens. Mm-hmm. And then the second part of the game, which we'll talk about a lot later, was about having the device be all in one, that you can shoot video with it and then you can play it back on the same device.
And I guess Le Prince got really close here, but unfortunately for him, right as he was sort of on his way to go prove his concept and his with his camera, he sort of just mysteriously disappears.
Yeah, so he also would have gotten credit for first playing a film for an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So even if other people did have completed films at the time, nobody had shown one to an audience yet. And he had it all set up to show some of his films or one of his films or something.
Yeah.
He was going to show something in New York. He had already patented his camera. He was going to show something in New York. And the story is that he boarded a train in Dijon, France to get to Paris to then get on a boat because it's crazy to think about how there aren't even airplanes now. You're still doing transcontinental voyages and they're already making films.
Well, and he'd booked his ticket. He'd set everything up with the family. He was going to go, you know, there were no movie theaters at the time, right? So he'd set everything up with a family, a wealthy family in New York. To listen to truck sounds outside.
Yeah. What? Oh, is that the garbage?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, it seems weird that he would just up and vanish like that. And there's sort of several popular theories, none of which really make any kind of sense to me.
No, me neither. People like the, oh, he went off and committed suicide theory.
And it doesn't
make any, wow, it seems like he was doing pretty well.
I mean, unless he'd made all of these plans and his prototype, and he secretly his prototype just like wasn't working, you know, I guess maybe, but he'd already displayed some films for people, right? Like, this wasn't,
it seemed like he was right on the edge of success, and it seemed like he had some idea of what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he was thinking as far ahead as some of the other guys a couple years later that were thinking about marketing and right, all that, because he was, and then he'd had, like, he was one of those guys that had lots of jobs. He was an inventor, and he was this, and he was that. So this was just
he was teaching in the School of Design and Engineering, or whatever.
It was one of many things he was doing, but he spent a lot of time on this to then not follow through. It just seems so bizarre.
Well, then people theorize that maybe his brother killed him because he owed his brother some money, but that also doesn't really feel right because it wasn't his brother didn't need the money. Well, I don't know, and then. Then there's the prevailing theory of his, well, the theory that his wife and son believe is true, which is that Edison had him assassinated.
Right. Which sounds a little bit.
Which is the best theory. I love it. because Edison is a villain in this story.
What does he say in Bruges? That'd make a good film.
Yeah, it would be a great film. That should be, it feels very Hitchcockian.
Right. And so when I first read that on Wikipedia, like, people think that Edison had him killed, I like laughed out loud. I thought that was just sort of something that we made up today.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that's what his family believed, that his daughters believed that until they died, I think. Like, his wife died believing that Edison had taken a boat to, or whatever, or hired a guy to have him killed.
Well, the guy in the first film, he says, you know, he's like, I just have a really tough time believing that, like, whatever, Edison came out of a dark alley with a silenced pistol and a trench coat and hat and just, you know.
The imagery is hilarious.
Yeah. Though. And Louis LaPrinche just turns to him and says something like, I've been expecting you. And just, you know, falls dead in the street in a pool of, in an ever expanding pool of blood. Like,
he falls onto the train tracks and just gets run over dozens of times. Oh, the train goes back and forth over.
That's gruesome.
Like in a bad movie.
Oh no.
So
a smear.
The first film, by the way, the documentary, it's a 2015 documentary. Not to confuse you, the 2015 documentary called The First Film is incredibly difficult to find. Mm-hmm. It's not on Amazon. It's really hard to find hard copies. I ended up renting it on Vimeo in order to watch it. But it explores all of this with Louis LaPrinche and how he made his first films. They look at his replicas of his cameras as well as the original cameras. They have the 16 lens camera and they have Louis LaPrinche's single lens camera that he used to shoot the Round Hay garden scene. And also there's another little round about 20 frame film of his of traffic crossing a bridge in Leeds, I think also.
And there's actual written accounts of people having viewed that in which they say, it's so clear that you could see pipe smoke coming out of a man's pipe who was walking across the bridge, which...
it's incredible definition.
Yeah, I mean, I always kind of assumed when I was watching old black and whites or these, you know, old silent films that, like, it was always crappy.
Oh, I did too! That's so funny! I thought that they were watching blurry movies.
Yeah, right.
Well, now I feel stupid.
Yeah, and now I feel silly because watching some of these restored versions of these silents, I mean, it's a visual treat, man. Like, you know, if you were ever wondering what life was like back then, well, you don't have to wonder. You can actually go see it in these movies. I mean, the clothes, the how they were decorating their homes. You know, it's.
Yeah, just in the last few years, restoration has become really, really advanced.
Anyway, that's me selling. That's enough of me selling that, I suppose.
It's a fun time to be doing this, though.
Well, yeah, and we've found a lot. You know, some of these books that I've read. We'll get deeper into this discussion as we progress, I'm sure, but they were operating with far less material than you and I have access to right now. You know, there weren't digital film libraries. YouTube didn't exist. So there wasn't just a place where literally anybody could go to find all of this wonderful, wonderful free content.
Yeah, there's only a few places where they house a lot of original copies of things. There's like George Eastman House and the BFI.
Yeah, I was going to say, imagine being like...
The Cinematique Française.
You know, Bill, imagine being William K. Everson back in the 70s when he wrote that book. And if he wanted to go see something that was housed in the, you know, the BFI's film library, he either had to order it and they had to ship it to him, which I don't know if they do that, or you have to physically go there and know the things you want to see.
What's his book called?
American Silent Film.
Right. Yeah, we've used that as, even though it's pretty old, we've used that as a reference a lot.
It was a good jumping off point, considering I knew next to nothing about silent film, or I don't know, film pre-1920. Maybe I'd seen some Buster Keaton or like fucking Laurel and Hardy shit.
Well, before we started doing this, I had seen very few films pre-1940, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much silent film I'd seen, if any at all. I mean, my earliest touchstone was probably something like Casablanca.
That was like the earliest film you'd seen?
Yeah,
Oh, okay. Because Casablanca's not a silent film.
No. But like, it's something that I'd seen and taken seriously is like, wow, this is great. this is an amazing piece of film, you know. So shame on me.
Well, it's been fun just doing the research, so.
Yeah.
I'm excited to actually get into the podcast itself.
It's taken, I don't know, you took a while before I could sit down in front of something like the first film and not have to sort of pull my phone out and Google names. I have to research my research.
So do we have anything else to say about Louis the Prince?
I don't think so.
Or Edward Muybridge?
No. Their names may or may not come up again.
They were sort of the earliest pioneers that we could find.
Louis the Prince will probably come up again in reference to some other early film, some early film pioneers, whether they be engineers or filmmakers. You know, we'll probably compare their inventions / work to his. But Muybridge, probably not. This is probably the last time we'll hear from him.
Yeah, he was just mostly our connection from photography to film.
Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, this is... So we've covered up until basically 1888 for our first episode. That's a lot earlier than I originally thought our first episode would be, but here we are.
We'll probably make a jump ahead next week. So if you haven't already, subscribe to the show to see updates. In the meantime, you can follow us on social media, on Instagram. The show's there at hardknocks_film. I'm there at Timville, and Chloe is there at Black Beacon Sound. So give us a follow. I mean, you don't have to follow us personally. You can do that if you want. But if you follow the show's page, we'll try and put updates up there. You can also follow us on Discord. We'll be there. You can discuss this stuff or anything film related or anything else you want to talk about. So come find us there. And until then.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. Go watch that stuff. And then come talk to us about it, because we're sick of talking to each other about it only. All right.
All right. Hard Knocks Film School, episode 1.
Bye, guys.
Bye.